Hey everybody, welcome to episode 39 of Fit Friends Happy Hour. Today, Katie and I interview Dr. Laura Grabowski, who is a women's health and pelvic health physical therapist in the Indianapolis area. This interview is a must listen for every female and maybe even every male out there. Both Katie and I learned so much from Laura. Laura is so passionate about women's health and pelvic health, and it really shows in this interview. Okay, let's get on to the show.
Welcome to Fit Friends Happy Hour with your hosts, Katie Hake and Lauren Wrighton.
Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, everybody.
All right, so we are talking about women's health and pelvic health today, and can't wait to learn so much.
Yeah, so do you want me to introduce myself? Okay. So my name is Dr. Laura Grabowski, and I am a physical therapist who specializes in women's and pelvic health. So I treat women across the lifespan with all sorts of different conditions that relate to being a woman and to having a pelvis.
We first kind of wanted to figure out, because both Katie and I don't know this, like, how did you get into this field?
So I went into physical therapy thinking I wanted to do sports and orthopedics. And as I was going through my coursework, every time they would talk about pregnancy or postpartum, I would like listen in a little bit more closely, and I just thought, oh, maybe someday I'll be pregnant. I should pay attention. And then as I continued to learn more and more, I realized that the pelvis is this integral part of your body and you can't really ignore it. And I felt like treating patients' spine and hips and just ignoring everything in between was not going to give them the full results. So now I can't imagine treating without looking at the pelvic muscles and all of the things that relate to the pelvis.
It blows my mind how you can get that specific in what you want to do and how there's a need for this. Like, before we met you, I had no idea this was even a thing, and it's so interesting.
Yeah, and since I've been pregnant, I know how like integral the pelvis is and how many women have issues during pregnancy and after pregnancy. So I can tell it's one of those things that's like, you should be focusing on it, but you're not. So that's why I'm especially excited to talk about this, because I still don't know that much about it, but I just know it's important.
Yeah, a lot of my patients kind of dissociate from the pelvis because culturally we don't talk about it. I mean, in high school, you go through sex ed and they introduce you to the whole pelvic area. And then they're like, okay, now forget this exists until you're married. So obviously a lot of people don't have a very good mind-body connection to this region of their body.
So when most people think about their pelvis, are they thinking of going to the bathroom, or are they thinking of it in like a sexual sense? Do you know, like, from talking to people?
Well, it depends on what the patient's coming in for. So if they're coming in with incontinence, they're usually thinking that their pelvis main function is peeing and pooping. But if they're coming in postpartum and they're having dyspareunia, which is painful sex, then they're probably thinking more of its sexual function. So I think people's perceptions of it changes throughout their lifetime too.
Okay, so Katie and I both know that you went to Purdue for an undergrad. What did you study, and where did you go from there as far as your education goes?
So I went to Purdue for undergrad and studied health and kinesiology with the major movement sports science. And then I went on to Duke to study a doctor of physical therapy, which is 3 years year-round schooling. After that, you have kind of a different options if you want to specialize. You can do a one-year residency, or you can do mentorship and continuing ed classes, which is the route I took. So I did 4 pelvic health continuing ed classes, and then I've done other coursework in lumbopelvic dysfunction, sacroiliac dysfunction, pregnancy and postpartum, and breast cancer, which is kind of uninvolved, but still related to women.
So Lauren and I are just personal trainers. So this just goes to show you how much more knowledge there is to the human body and anatomy and physiology and everything that goes on. So pay attention, turn it up, take notes.
Yeah, and we'll even mention, like, ask your trainers for plans on this and ask your trainers for like specifics. But a good trainer is going to know their scope of practice, which is very specific, and hopefully your trainer or the people that you're asking for help know when to refer you to a physical therapist or another person for whatever you need. All right, so with that in mind, what kind of people are you generally seeing in your job on a day-to-day basis?
So I'm seeing probably 95% women, and the age range can be anywhere from teenage girls to, I've treated someone who's in their 90s. With teenagers, a lot of times it's gymnasts who are doing really high impact things and having leakage, especially if they have a history of sexual abuse. And then a lot of people in the pregnancy and postpartum phase, and then a lot of changes kind of become more apparent during the menopausal phase as well.
So I've heard before that there are issues with like sexual abuse and your relationship with your pelvis. You said about how they'll have incontinence or leakage with that. Why is that? Is it like because of physical trauma?
Yeah. So a big misconception about a pelvic floor physical therapist is that if you come to us, all we're going to do is give you Kegels. And that is maybe 1/20th of what I do in a day. So typically, when someone is having leakage after sexual trauma or an abdominal procedure or a vaginal delivery or a hysterectomy, typically they're having issues because there's been damage to the muscles. So there's kind of two categories we put the pelvic muscles. They're either underactive or overactive, or hypotonic or hypertonic. Typically, if you have someone who's had an injury to a muscle, it will tighten up. And it might have some scar tissue in it or some muscle spasms. And then the muscle isn't functioning well because it's too tight. So an example I use is if you pull your hamstring, it's not going to function well because it's too tight after that. And so you need to release the muscle and then strengthen it back up. If you went about that by just doing Kegels and skipping the healing part and going straight into the strengthening part, it's only going to make your problem worse because you're trying to strengthen a damaged muscle or an injured muscle.
When these patients come to you from trauma, then is it damage that occurred like within the year, or is it years later? Like, what's the span, or can it vary?
Typically, if people are coming to me, it's years later. I don't think that's how it should be, but a lot of times patients sift through a primary care physician, an OBGYN, a urogynecologist, a GI specialist, maybe a pain doctor, and then find their way to me, which is why I think podcasts like this are so great, because they're really obvious symptoms if you know what you're looking for.
Tell us a little more about the functions of the pelvis. I think when you say pelvis, yeah, we kind of have this general term. So can you break it down for us what exactly that means? What are we talking about?
So in the pelvis, you have the bony anatomy, which is the femur attaching into the ilium, which is the hip joint. It wraps around in a ring to have your pubic symphysis in the front and your sacrum in the back, which is where your SI or sacroiliac joints are, and then your spine stems northward. The pelvic floor muscles are like a bowl underneath the pelvis, and they span from your pubic bone back to your tailbone and in between your two sit bones. And there's three main groups of muscles there. So the most superficial layer of muscles, they mainly have a sexual function. So they house glands, and when they contract, they help with lubrication, and then they help with having a fulfilling orgasm. And then the second layer of muscles is mainly for continence. So there are sphincters, so round-shaped muscles around the urethra and around the rectum and the vagina and the urethra. And they should close up all the way to prevent leakage, and they should also open up all the way so that you can have complete bowel movements. You should be able to empty your bladder without straining. You shouldn't have issues with hemorrhoids if these muscles are functioning well. And then the deepest layer of muscle, they're bigger and they're shaped like a bowl. And so their job is to hold up the weight of your organs. And then they also have direct fascial connections into the abdominal wall. And that just means there's connective tissue helping the abdominal muscles work with the pelvic muscles to create stability through the pelvis and your spine. So basically, the pelvic muscles, if all of them are working correctly, you wouldn't have any type of symptoms related to pee, poop, sex, or pain. So those are kind of my four big questions when I'm interviewing a new patient. I think of the pelvis as grand central station for your musculoskeletal system, because your legs stem off of it, and then it is the foundation for your spine. So if you think of your spine like a skyscraper, you want your foundation to be symmetrical. You want it to be strong. You don't want to have an abnormal pull in one direction. And that's what the pelvis is. It's also grand central station because it houses your urinary system, your sexual and reproductive system, your GI system as well as your lymphatic system. And then you also have all the muscles and ligaments involved.
Wow, that's super important.
So important. I think we talk so much about the core and working your core and your midsection. And the reality, I think, is this is even more important.
Yeah, I'm telling my patients all the time, whenever your yoga instructor tells you to like engage your core, they also want you to do like a 25% Kegel so that that muscle group is also engaged. The problem when people have dysfunctional muscles because they're holding too much tension is the muscle goes back to its rudimentary function, which is on and off. And so it doesn't know how to do these controlled, graded movements the way that it should. And that's a lot of what I help patients learn to do, is to coordinate their muscles so that they use them effectively and they don't get tired by the end of the day.
All right. So what issue are most women facing?
Typically, what I'm seeing with most of my patients is a lack of core and hip stabilization with hypermobility throughout their spine and hips. So in general, when women are pregnant or in that postpartum phase, the pelvis has more laxity, so it has more give because the pelvis had widened for delivery. And when you have more laxity at the ligaments, you rely more on your muscles. So minor weaknesses here and there at the pelvis will become much more apparent. The thing about the pelvis is there's hundreds of muscles that attach to it, and our brains are really intelligent, so it's really easy for us to find compensations to cheat our way. But during pregnancy and postpartum, sometimes those compensations no longer fulfill the need of keeping the pelvis stable.
That makes sense. So you said 95% of your patients are women. What issue are men facing?
So my poor male patients, I have such a heart for them, because typically when men have an issue, it is mortifying for them and they have to really expose themselves to get advice that they need. So typically the patients I see are men with groin pain or repetitive hernias from using a Valsalva maneuver and creating too much intra-abdominal pressure with heavy lifting and really poor flexibility. A lot of times I'll see men with groin pain, abdominal pain, urinary urgency frequency. So they'll feel like they constantly have to go to the bathroom. Men will also, if they have tension in the pelvic muscles, they can create entrapment of the pudendal nerve or the genitofemoral nerve, which are both nerves that supply sensory to the pelvis. And so if that nerve is getting too much compression or too much friction, it can refer to testicular or penile pain. I'll also treat men with constipation. And then one of the biggest groups of men we treat is post-prostatectomy, because the prostate sits right below the bladder. And so it's basically their little pelvic floor. And when they remove it, they rely on their pelvic muscles more. And then they'll have issues with leakage.
Just so I'm understanding right, so if someone were having constipation that you'd be treating them for, would that be, I can't remember the word you said, hyper or hypo, right? There would be too tight?
Yeah. So constipation is a huge, very individualized condition because there's so many different things that feed into it. So when I have a patient coming in with constipation, I'm looking at their diet, I'm looking at their water intake, I'm looking at their cortisol levels, I'm looking at their sleep patterns, any history of abdominal surgeries that might be creating myofascial or visceral restrictions throughout the abdomen and decreasing their motility. And then also, are the pelvic muscles coordinated? Are they so tight and they can't release? So when people are having constipations, a lot of times they'll fluctuate between 3 or 4 bowel movements in a day and then skip 3 or 4 days and then have a 1 bowel movement and then have 2 in a day, and they're just all over the place. And that's because the longer the bowel sits in the digestive tract, the more dehydrated it gets. And then it can almost make like a plug. And then when they evacuate the plug, they have loose stool behind it. Another issue would be if the pelvic muscles aren't relaxing fully, or if they're straining and not relaxing the muscles at all and just pushing the bowel through a contracted muscle, then they're going to have PC bowel movements. They're going to feel bloated. They're going to feel gassy. They're going to feel like they're not emptying fully, or they have to go back an hour after having a bowel movement and release more bowel. So it's just a lot of abdominal discomfort that I'm usually treating.
So you mentioned men that have to have their prostate removed. Are they immediately referred to you as a physical therapist, or are their doctors just kind of releasing them?
Yeah. So after a prostatectomy, typically the guy will be catheterized for a short period of time and the doctor will warn them that they will have leakage short term. A lot of men just live with the leakage the rest of their life if it's pretty mild. But the research is showing that preoperative physical therapy gives you better results. And within a year of having the prostatectomy, you can get really good results in decreasing the leakage. But sometimes I'll have men come because they heard about me 3 or 4 years afterwards, and they still get good results, but not 100% usually. I think that it should be mainstream that a patient come in for at least one pre-op appointment and one post-op. But I would say that our healthcare system is probably not the most progressive. For example, in Australia and most of Europe, it is normal for a pregnant woman to have a pregnancy physical therapy appointment, and then after their 6-week follow-up after their delivery, to have a postpartum visit with a pelvic therapist. And that's just mainstream healthcare there. But here in America, I don't think that patients are getting as much benefit as they could.
I feel like that's just preventative medicine in general. There's just, we treat the problem as it comes. We don't try to prevent it. And that would be a huge, imagine how many problems that you could avoid or at least lessen with that.
One thing I can say, though, just to the pregnancy and postpartum crowd out there, is that almost every patient I have over the age of 40 says, why did no one tell me about this sooner? Like, why didn't I find out about this right after I delivered my child 20, 30 years ago? And so I'll tell pregnant patients that. And also, if you've delivered a baby, you've hit your deductible. So you might as well soak up all the healthcare you can get in that postpartum phase.
That's so true. And I remember you and I talked, I think it was like 6 months after I'd had Sammy, because I remember I was like on the edge of thinking like, oh yeah, I'm still having incontinence, but is this normal? And you said that it was normal until like a year, right?
So incontinence is normal within the first few weeks, but after that, the muscles should heal. I mean, it doesn't take longer than 6 to 8 weeks for a muscle to heal if it's healing in a healthy environment. What I was probably referring to was pain. So if anybody's having discomfort, it takes 6 to 8 weeks for an episiotomy scar to heal. So at your 6-week follow-up visit, your doctor will say, you're cleared. You can have sex, you can exercise, you can do whatever you want. And what they mean is you can do these things and not cause damage. But that doesn't necessarily mean the muscles have healed to the point where they're ready to tolerate intense exercise or sex in an unmodified way. So a lot of people will still have pain or discomfort for 6 months to a year, especially if they're trying to let the muscle heal without any therapy intervening. Also, when I treat patients postpartum, I usually don't see them for more than 5 weeks.
So there you go. All of the women that are thinking about getting pregnant or are pregnant right now, including myself, or just had a baby, you should go see Laura or someone like Laura so you can get the most out of your pelvis. Okay, next question. What should every woman be doing if they want to have kids? So what recommendation could you give someone who's maybe either in their early 20s and know they want to have kids eventually, or actually thinking actively about getting pregnant?
So Holly Herman, who is kind of the pelvic guru in the physical therapy world, she said in one of my courses, if a woman had an orgasm every day, she would never have to do a Kegel in her life. So that's my first advice for any woman, if that's possible for you. The second thing that I would say is a lot of it is just maintaining a good mind-body connection. So learning where your pelvis is in space and how it feels. A lot of times people will learn this through trying new exercises. So our mind loves when it discovers all the different ways our body can move. And so if you're trying new things, it's really fueling that trust and that connection between your mind and your pelvis. So a lot of that is trying out new dances or exercises or fitness classes or videos online, because the more connected you are with your body, the more you'll be able to decipher if it's communicating to you that something's wrong. One thing I would definitely say would benefit for most women is low impact exercise that has a high degree of like concentration. So Pilates or yoga or mindfulness training, Tai Chi, things like that. because women need more stabilization than men, and you get that through maintaining poses and gaining control over your body. So I tell people that's the difference between a ballerina and a bodybuilder, and women need to have more of that tone than men do.
I love that tip too, because I think just body awareness in general, people don't understand how good their body's meant to feel until they pay attention to it with exercise. Oh, this is what it's supposed to feel like. Oh, this feels good. This doesn't feel good. And recognizing the differences. If you're treating a pregnant patient, what are some things you tell them to look out for after delivery?
So typically when I'm treating a pregnant patient, I will talk to them about what their pelvic muscles need to tolerate during delivery if they're planning a vaginal delivery. And then I tell them at their 6-week follow-up, if there is any of these red flags, then that's a sign that they're a really good candidate for pelvic floor PT. So I tell them if you're still having leakage, whether it be urinary or bowel, if you're still having issues with hemorrhoids, if you attempt intercourse or you try to insert your finger and it's really painful, that's another good sign that the muscles are not feeling very healthy, because a healthy muscle will not hurt. The other thing I talk to patients about is checking for a diastasis recti, which is a separation of your rectus abdominis, which are your six-pack muscles. So a lot of times those muscles will split during pregnancy and they can heal normally, but sometimes they don't. And if you have a weakness in your core, that can lead to back pain down the road or hip pain and other issues.
I feel like this topic is very hot out there right now. I'm not even going to attempt to say what it is, but is that something, you said it sometimes never heals, for people who it does heal for, is that, like, how long is it? And are there patients who are less likely to heal or most likely to heal from it?
So typically patients will have this if they've had twins or a C-section, because the abdominal muscles are inhibited whenever they're cut through until the C-section heals. And so those muscles will not start to activate in their normal motor program the way they did, and your body will start to use compensation, such as stabilizing with your external obliques or your back muscles. And if there's a separation, there can be a lot of different factors. There can be restrictions in your small intestines that need to be released. There can be myofascial restrictions from your back. So if you have a lot of tension in your back, that can prevent the muscles from coming back to meet in the front. But the main thing is just retraining those muscles and avoiding crunches.
I was actually just going to ask you that. So for the people listening that are pregnant, and myself obviously included, what core exercises do you recommend someone do while they're pregnant? And are there any exercises that they should completely avoid?
Yeah, I don't really recommend crunches at any phase during the lifespan. But during pregnancy, I'll recommend modified planks, which is where you're in a crawling position. And you can do like a bird dog, raising your arm or leg. You could do fire hydrants. You could also do like lift both knees up about a centimeter, which is like a smaller plank. That's really good. You can do push-ups against the wall or the counter if you don't feel like you can do them on the floor anymore. And all you want to do is keep your spine in neutral and draw your belly straight in without moving your spine. And that's a good sign that you're utilizing your core stabilizers rather than doing a crunching motion.
Don't get me wrong, I'm team anti-crunches as well. But why specifically crunches? Why should people avoid those?
Yeah, so we tell people to avoid crunches because whenever you think about your core as a can of pop, so you have your abdominal muscles in the front, your back muscles in the back to create that cylinder, and then at the base you have your pelvic muscles and your diaphragm at top. When you do a crunch, typically what you're doing is crunching that can, and that's going to create an increase in intra-abdominal pressure. And when you have an increase in pressure, it's going to try to release in one way or the other. And typically it's going to take the holes. So that's when people get worse leakage, or if they already have a weakness in the abdomen from that diastasis recti, that's going to apply even more pressure from all of that crunchy motion. Also, it's a lot of an increased intra-abdominal pressure with the crunch is adding pressure on a loaded disc. So that's not typically healthy for your back either.
Sounds awful and makes sense.
And no one likes crunches. So there you go. You don't have to do them anymore. All right. So when someone comes to you and they have pain or they have one of these common symptoms, how are you actually evaluating those muscles?
So typically I'll start with a really thorough assessment because I'm looking at all of the different functions of the pelvis, which includes their diet, and includes their bowel health, includes their urinary health. It also includes any history of abdominal pain or if they have a history of endometriosis or painful periods or PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, because those will all affect the health of the pelvic muscles. Because if there's issues that are causing inflammation, such as food sensitivities or ovarian cyst, then the muscles are probably going to be a little bit more sensitive. Then after I've kind of gathered all the information from the patient, I usually zoom out and then zoom in. So when I zoom out, I'm looking at the pelvis in the big picture. So I'm looking at how their spine moves on top of their pelvis, how their hips articulate into their pelvis. Is the alignment in good? Do I feel tension creating kind of a malalignment at the pelvis? And then sometimes if there's enough to treat there, that'll be all we do in one day. But if the patient's comfortable with it and they feel like they could benefit from it, I usually do a vaginal assessment of the pelvic muscles. And patients are always so terrified of this, but when they leave, they feel like they've gained such a better awareness. I've had so many patients say, like, I have never learned so much about my body. Because as I'm treating them, I'm talking them through of like, see how this left hip is different than this right hip. See how this pelvic bone sits further forward than this right one. And that's helping them to strengthen their mind-body awareness because they might have never even realized that their left hip had any difference than their right hip. With the vaginal assessment, I'm feeling the muscles layer by layer. So that first layer is literally only inserted to your first knuckle. So that's less than 2 centimeters into the vagina. And I kind of move my finger around like a clock, feeling for tension or muscle spasms or aching in the muscle that might create urinary urgency or any type of discomfort. And then I'm checking the patient's coordination. So can they do a Kegel? When they Kegel, are they just squeezing around the rectum or are they actually engaging the muscles around the urethra? Can they relax in a timely manner or is it a delayed relaxation because of tension in the muscles? Can they bear down? Can they hold a Kegel and maintain breathing or do they have to hold their breath? And then can they do a reverse Kegel? And most people have no idea what that is. So I have to teach them what that is and then they usually fail the first day. But they get the hang of it eventually.
A reverse Kegel sounds like so fancy, which is really funny.
Yeah, this is all pretty much in one initial consult, right?
So typically I'll see people for about an hour and I can assess all these things in 1 hour's time and at least get them started. Usually I won't see my patients for more than once a week, sometimes twice a week. And the majority of people are 80% better within 6 weeks.
That is awesome. And obviously so worth your time. I mean, if you have any of these symptoms, you don't want them nagging you for the rest of your life.
What are the top exercises that you recommend for strengthening your pelvic floor?
So one of the exercises that pretty much every patient in my office gets is pelvic breathing, which I prefer to do in child's pose. So pelvic breathing incorporates both a Kegel and one of those reverse Kegels. So when I have people do a reverse Kegel, I tell them to envision that there is a ball, like a golf ball size balloon in the vagina. And as you're inhaling, you're bringing that breath all the way down through the diaphragm to get into the pelvis and inflate that balloon. What that will do is stretch the pelvic muscles from the inside out and then allow the pelvic muscles to release. This is also how you should initiate a bowel movement, is with an inhale. So I'll have people position themselves in child's pose and do one of those inhales all the way down to the pelvis and inflate that balloon. And what they'll feel is their sit bones kind of widen. And then when they exhale, I have them Kegel. So inhale with a reverse Kegel and exhale with a Kegel. This pumping motion works the muscle through its entire range of motion, through all the way lengthened to all the way contracted. And pumping also brings in really good blood flow, which helps stimulate the lymph nodes of the groin and prevent pelvic congestion, which causes menstrual cramps.
So this might be getting into like a whole another conversation, but are menstrual cramps normal?
Menstrual cramps are common, just like leakage, but they are not normal. So typically if somebody is having menstrual cramps, they are having visceral restrictions for the ligaments that support the uterus, or sometimes people will even have ovulation pain, which would be visceral restrictions to the structures that support the ovaries.
I had no idea. That is so fascinating.
Whenever I was diagnosed with PCOS, which now my doctor thinks is a misdiagnosis, but I was diving into that world of PCOS and I was learning so much more about it, I started to learn that like menstrual cramps weren't normal. And so I was wondering, but it was kind of from a not a doctor source. So I was curious if that was actually true.
And if anyone's struggling from PCOS, I usually recommend the website PCOS Diva. It's a health and wellness coach that made this website, and her material is very reader friendly.
Cool. I always love a good recommendation, and there are a lot of people out there that are suffering from that. I kind of wanted to backpedal and ask you about planks during pregnancy. So more specifically, I guess, if someone has already felt the separation in their abs, should they continue doing planks throughout their pregnancy?
Typically, if someone can feel the separation, the main thing I tell them is to focus in on their breathing over the specific activities they're doing. So if you're going to be exerting yourself, such as picking up a laundry hamper, picking up your toddler, picking up groceries, or holding an abdominal position, make sure that you're breathing and focusing more in on the exhalation, because that's releasing the intra-abdominal pressure so that you're not creating more pressure on that weak spot in your abdominal core. Typically, I don't have people do full out planks because they just end up overusing their paraspinals and going into an anterior pelvic tilt and arching their back. So that's why I like to have people go in that crawling position and just lift their knees up so that they're on their toes and hands, but they're not in that fully extended position. And it's actually really hard.
So you mean do Beast from Pio?
Yes, exactly.
Wait, Katie, you should do like a spinoff of Pio that's like Pio for pregnancy. Or no, not even for pregnancy, but Pio for your pelvis. Oh my gosh.
It always makes me laugh because people will ask me like, well, can you teach mommy and me classes, or can you teach like stroller classes? And I'm like, whoa, people. I'm not at that stage in my life. I don't have a child to hold unless I brought Sammy, but I could always do that.
Hey, you could be Sans' child and still do it. But I think I'm actually going to do stroller classes with this next baby because I want to see what that's like.
Yeah, I don't know of any really good like pregnancy or postpartum related classes, but I don't have like a specific group that I recommend for people.
Also, I think the majority of the population should probably focus on doing Beast and, like you said, the breathing. So many people, I think, in plank position specifically, they don't even know what they're supposed to be feeling. They feel it yet, like you said, in your back, anterior pelvic tilt, and aren't actually getting the benefit of the move. So why not regress, focus on your breathing, and get it right first?
What should all women be doing to keep their body and their pelvis healthy throughout their lifetime?
So I have three major platforms that I tell women to be doing throughout their entire lifetime. The first one is standing on one leg. So I tell women you should stand on one leg every time you brush your teeth for multiple reasons. Women tend to be more prone to osteoporosis, and I don't want them to fall and break a hip because they have never practiced balance. The other thing is it's a great hip stabilizer. So when you see people walking and their pelvis is literally collapsing with each step that they take, that's a good sign that they are never practicing any balance or hip stabilization exercises. The second thing I tell every woman to do is some sort of plyometric or jumping activity. There's been recent research that shows that even running isn't enough impact to stimulate Wolf's Law, which means that you need impact to generate greater bone density. And so women need to be jumping rope or hopping to create better bone growth. The last thing I recommend for women is squatting, because if you ever do get injured or have a surgery and you have to be in bed, your muscles atrophy at a rate of 4% every time you're in bed. So if you've been in bed for 3 days and you've lost 8% of your lower extremity muscular strength, you might not have the power you need to push yourself out of bed. So I tell people, do squatting. If squatting isn't something that you can do because your knee hurts, then do sit to stands or hold on to the edge of the sink so that you can have better balance while you practice squatting. Squatting is also really good for the pelvic muscles because whenever you go down, the sit bones separate, and so you get a little bit of stretch. And every time you engage your glutes to help push you back up, you Kegel a little bit with it. So it's working on that pelvic breathing in a functional movement.
Wait, I love these tips because we are all about giving like very direct, specific tips to the point. And those are just three simple things that you can do every day and it will take you less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, that really surprises me that you said like jump roping, because you'd think, like when I think of jump roping, it's like, oh, well, it's hard on your body. So it's fascinating to learn that like has its own benefits.
So actually, a couple weeks ago, they had new research published about arthritis, and doctors have been saying for years that it's due to wear and tear on your body. And they looked at the cartilage of skeletons from as far back as, I think, 2000 BC, and they had better cartilage than people nowadays. So they actually think that it's the combination of living a sedentary lifestyle and then doing activities that you aren't conditioned for, and that the arthritis isn't due to wear and tear. It's due to strain on deconditioned tissue.
Wow, that's so interesting. I love that.
So hypothetically, I'm a pregnant woman. I listen to Fit Friends Happy Hour religiously. I'm mind blown. I don't know what to do now about my pelvis. Where can I find more information?
So I work for St. Vincent. And one thing I love about St. Vincent's ministry is that they are really pushing women's health services right now. And they are offering such incredible resources for pregnancy through their Monogram Maternity program. One of the very first steps would be to sign up for Beautiful Beginnings, which you can take for free. It's housed once a month, and it's basically speed dating for first-time moms with all the different healthcare providers that they will be interacting with during their pregnancy. So they'll be talking to a pelvic floor PT, an OBGYN, a labor and delivery nurse, a nurse navigator who tells them about the courses that are available to them for free, and a pediatrician and a lactation consultant. So it's a two-hour event where you can get all the information that you would need to care for your body during your pregnancy and create the happiest pregnancy for you and your baby.
That sounds so awesome. I feel like I need that now for my life. How does speed dating for getting your life together?
Speed dating for your health, just in general. But yeah, I did that program that Laura's explaining, and it was awesome. And then now, since I'm more aware of it, I've seen like billboards for other hospitals in our area that do these type of programs. So I'm sure that, or I hope at least, that they're common in other cities.
So if you're looking for a pelvic PT and you don't know who's in your area, what I would go to would be the APTA website, which is the American Physical Therapy Association website, and that is APTA.org. And at the top, there is a Find a PT link, and you can click on that and put in a diameter from your address, and then I would hit the drop down and hit Women's Health, and then that will show you women's health physical therapist in your geographical area.
Wow, my mind is seriously blown. I was interested in this topic, but I feel like I just had no idea. And now I can't wait to listen to this podcast again. If our listeners have questions, would it be okay if we put your email in the links or show notes somewhere where they can contact you?
Yeah, definitely. I'd be willing to email anyone who has questions. I'm super nerdy about this topic, so I would love to talk to more people about it.
Also, that makes me so happy just having you on our podcast, because I love interviewing and meeting women who are just passionate about what they do. Like the fact that you're just sitting here on a Tuesday night with us just talking about this, you know, just because you love to do it is just so cool.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yes, thanks so much for coming on. That is it for today. If you guys have any questions, like we said, we'll put Laura's email in our Instagram post. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Write us a review, especially on this specific episode. If you loved it, let us know. All right, we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.